You are listening to This Book I Read, a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm. Welcome to This Book I Read, a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm, where we talk about books. And we talk to people who write books about books, all book stuff. My name is Chris. You probably know that if you've listened to the podcast before. I am known as C.M. Lowry. I like reading and writing pretty much anything. And most recently, I got involved in ISBN Coffee, which will probably be out when you listen to this podcast. Find out more about me at allaboutchris.org or on all the socially places as at C.M. Lowry Author. However, we're not here to talk about me. Let's introduce someone new to the podcast. This is Matt. Hello.
Hello, Chris. Nice introduction.
Tell us about your full name and who you are and all those sort of things.
Yeah, nicely dodged. So my name is Matt Beaton. It looks like Beaton. Everyone pronounces it Beaton, but it is Beaton. Sidebar, there is a town in near Sheffield called Beaton, and I travelled there once for a workshop I was doing, and I walked into a cafe and just asked the people, how do you pronounce the name of your village, thinking this will vindicate me? And they all pronounced it Beaton, which completely kind of crapped all over my plan.
Yeah, I visited the town of Bath once in London to kind of not for this intent to settle the argument. We have a north-south argument in England. Is it Bath or Bath? Like, I'm having a bath. And everyone in the town of Bath said, I'm having a bath. And I was like, oh, that's irritating.
Yeah, really scuppers your plans. So yeah, Matt Beaton. So I was a primary school teacher for a long time. I've been a web developer for a long time. And now I'm an author, mainly kind of mid-grade children's stuff, but also game books. So in similar vein to Fighting Fantasy, Choose Your Own Adventure, those kind of solo RPG adventures called Pick Your Path Adventures. So you can find me at mattbeaton.co.uk. We'll probably put a link because it's probably easier than me spelling it.
I mean, even if they know how to pronounce it, knowing how to spell it's a whole other ballgame.
Exactly, yeah. And then I'm on social. I don't really use Twitter anymore because it's a bit of a cesspit. Instagram, YouTube, places like that, you can find me just under Matt Beaton or Matt Beaton Author.
So, Matt, why are you on the show?
Well, Chris, there's this book I read.
Good. So what book have you brought for us today? Tell us a bit about it.
Now, I cheated a little bit and I listened to some of the previous podcasts and I noticed one of them, Alex Tchaikovsky a while back, he brought Gormenghast. The trilogy. He cheated and brought a trilogy. And then a couple of episodes back, somebody cheated and bought the trilogy of Lord of the Rings. So I thought I would one up them all and bring a quintilogy. Is it a trilogy in five parts? And I've brought The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which, even though it is five books, I have actually brought the single edition with me that has got all five books in there. But primarily, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is the first book.
And that's by Douglas Adams.
It is. The great, late, great Douglas Adams, an incredibly funny man.
So tell us, it's a hard book to summarize in some ways, because it's mad. Try and tell us what it is. I've never heard of it. Tell us what it is in one sentence.
It is a surrealist quest across the galaxy that is just absolutely filled with madness, satirical takedowns of, well, the 1970s, the 1980s, Britain and America. It's a long run-on sentence, but that is basically what it is. It's just a load of nonsense for about 1,500 pages.
I have to say, I think probably my favourite bit of that description, and you were describing yourself, but it's a long run-on sentence, is
is probably a fair description of some of the levels of like plot planning that don't exist in the book. Brilliant. Do you have a quote that you'd like to read us to introduce our listeners?
I think it's probably, we've not got enough time for me to read the whole book, which is pretty much one long quote. I think my absolute favorite quote from it is just, and this was what really got me into it as a child, and that's, "The ships hung in the sky in much the same way that bricks don't." And I just think that kind of flip, that ridiculousness is just brilliant. But the quote I'm going to read is actually about towels, because I think nothing sums up Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy than Douglas Adams' obsession with carrying a towel with you. So, and this is, all about an intergalactic towel. "It has great practical value. You can wrap it around you for warmth as you bound across the cold moons of Jaglan Beta. You can lie on it in the brilliant marble-sanded beaches of Santraginus V, inhaling the heady sea vapours. You can sleep under it, beneath the stars which shine so redly on the desert world of Catrafoon. Use it to sail a mini raft down the slow, heavy river Moth. Wet it for use in hand-to-hand combat. Wrap it around your head to ward off noxious fumes or to avoid the gaze of the ravenous bug bladder beast of Traal, a mind-bogglingly stupid animal that assumes that if you can't see it, it can't see you. Daft as a brush, but very, very ravenous. You can wave your towel in emergencies as a distress signal, and of course, dry yourself off with it if it still seems to be clean enough."
Yeah, amazing.
I just think as a quote, that sums up everything about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The ridiculous place names, the just complete disregard for what might actually be out there. Just
I think usually when we have people on the show, I'm often familiar with their books. Sometimes I've read a bit of it in preparation for the show. I mean, Hitchhiker's Guide has been part of my life for as long as I remember. So it started with a radio show. That was actually, that came before the books. And the books are probably where Douglas Adams was able to kind of really, there was no one to say, you can't fit this into half an hour. So he could just really go down a rabbit hole. One of the things that really struck me from that there was the place names, like you mentioned. And I think what Douglas Adams was doing there was, it was a nod to, because, you know, he was writing in the kind of 80s, like I think, I'm not sure when the first book came
1979.
Out. 1979. Yeah. So at that time, what you had was a lot of sci-fi that was massive space opera books where there were like 9 of them. And there was way too much world building going on. And like people getting really invested in, like, you need to know all of this lore and these ridiculous names. And so he threw them out in a way that they didn't matter as well.
They're very throwaway. You never see them again. They never come back. I know that at one point he refers to just this strange island. I think it's when Zaphod Beeblebrox first lands there to steal the Heart of Goldship, and the island is called France, and he just throws it away as kind of, there are only so many words in the language, this one happens to be called France, there's no link to France.
And there's cricket as well, isn't it? There's the cricket planet, which everywhere else in the entire known universe is like the most horrendous. It's the Voldemort, you know, it's the word that you do not say, apart from one incredibly tiny, irrelevant, but also irreverent planet called Earth that happened to name a rather tedious game of sport after it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it is all just those nods to kind of, how ridiculous, like you say, all of the heavy science fiction at the time was kind of getting. You know, one of my other favorite authors is Terry Pratchett. I almost brought the entire Discworld with me today, which would have been pushing it a little bit. But he did the same thing kind of with his first Discworld books, which were very much a parody of kind of fantasy fiction at the time, with the swords and sorcery and the buxom maid and all that kind of stuff.
Well, the quote that you shared about they floated in the air in the same way that bricks don't reminded me of a very famous Terry Pratchett quote of the sun rolled across dawn broke and the sun rolled across the landscape like molten gold. And then there's a little asterisk and then it goes, although actually, you know, well, people didn't, actually, you know, trees didn't suddenly burst into flame and people didn't suddenly become extremely rich and even more dead. In fact, a better simile would have been, the sun rolled across the landscape, not like molten gold.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. They're very similar. And I got to Douglas Adams through Terry Pratchett. You know, I started reading, like the first book I ever read that I enjoyed was The Hobbit, which again almost came with me today. And had you not done Lord of the Rings a few episodes ago, it may well have done. And so, you know, I read The Hobbit and I loved the fantasy and then found Terry Pratchett in an airport when I was waiting with my nan and granddad at the time, found Reaper Man, and that led me into Terry Pratchett and then inevitably moved on to Douglas Adams as kind of the natural progression, I think, of this Terry Pratchett fantasy with a little bit more surreal science fiction.
Yeah, it's definitely it's more surreal.
Yeah,
Think
much
I
so.
mean we're not here to talk about Pratchett, and you're right,
No.
he needs to come on the podcast at some point, because like I mean he is probably, I would say, for many of us the most important author. I buy a lot of books in charity shops, and one thing that's really notable is you never see Pratchett in charity shops. People get
No.
them and they never get rid of them, you know. Okay, what is your favorite thing about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
My favorite thing, it is that idea that nothing really matters. You know, Arthur Dent, the main character, doesn't really change over the story. He doesn't, you know, he starts off as this cowardly, adventure averse kind of character that just wants to sit in his house, go to the pub, and live a very quiet life in rural England. And by the end of this massive adventure, you know, across the whole of space and time and five books, he still just wants to sit in his house and avoid all adventure and do nothing else. And he's none the wiser for it. He's not any more appreciative of the galaxy. He is just still this cynical bugger that hasn't learned anything really over it. And I find that fascinating. I think as a writer, this idea that actually your character doesn't have to have this redemptive arc. They can just be a human. You know, as humans, we don't often have redemptive arcs. We go through life shuffling from one day to another almost. And I think I like that about Arthur Dent. But it's the same with Ford, who is his kind of guide through the galaxy. He is cynical to begin with, has no responsibility, no sense of responsibility. And by the end, he still has no sense of responsibility. They are characters that go on these adventures and stay the same. And I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, I think I agree. I actually think it really is very novel. It's a novel. I think it is very novel. And on the one hand, so when you read Hitchhiker's Guide, it definitely, it almost possibly needs an edit, maybe, like,
Yes.
not to be too critical of it, but like it definitely, he it's quite an indulgent book. But he's indulging a joke rather than just being like self-indulgent as an author. He's almost being self-indulgent as an author because authors never get to do that, and it's actually
Yes.
quite exciting and satisfying seeing what happens when someone just goes off on a tangent for like 3 pages just to flesh out a joke fully. But you're right. I'd never really noticed that aspect that, yeah, the characters don't change and progress. And I do think, I think that's unique, because I can't, like, I'm thinking of characters like Sam Vines in the Terry Pratchett series, who does evolve and change
Definitely,
and mature over the, and actually he does it really well. And I think in Night Watch, we're not on a Terry Pratchett
yeah.
podcast here, but Night Watch is probably my favorite Terry Pratchett book, because I just felt it
No.
was such a culmination of Pratchett's craft, of the silliness. And it was like, I read it and I was like, oh, this was actually like a really, really proper book, wasn't it? Like, but actually there's a level of discipline required to make some characters who don't change over the course of five books.
Correct. And I think you get that same indulgence within the characters that you were saying about Douglas Adams almost kind of having free rein. And I think I read it as a teenager, kind of early teens, kind of 12, 13. And I think reading these characters like Zaffard and Ford, for readers who haven't read it, Zaffard Beetlebrox is, or no, yeah, Beetlebrox, isn't it? He's the leader of the galaxy, basically, but he's also a criminal. who has no responsibility, and Ford is kind of Arthur's guide through the world. And neither of those have any consequences really for their actions, and their kind of laissez-faire attitude to everything mirrors, I think, Douglas Adams' laissez-faire attitude to the plot. You know, there's a device called Machina Ex Deus, which is kind of lamented in literary circles and basically means an act of God. And so it's kind of like the lazy writing. When you get to the end of the story, and you're like, oh, how can I resolve this plot point? Act of God kind of thing. And you kind of wish it away. But Douglas Adams has made that an art form in Hitchhiker's Guide. You know, that there's the improbability drive that basically gives him license for anything that he can't quite explain away. He's like, oh yeah, it's an improbability drive thing. But he does it with such finesse and such panache that you kind of read it and it makes sense. And you're like, yeah, that fits totally within this world. There's no attitude. You don't get the impression of kind of, oh, that was a bit boring. Oh, yeah, he's been a bit lazy there. You're kind of reading like, oh, that is brilliant.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because very early on, and spoilers if you haven't read this, but very early on, the two of the lead characters get thrown out of a spaceship to die. And then straight away that Deus Ex Machina happens, where the ship that happens to just pick them up contains one of them, their cousin, who happens to be the president of the universe, and the other one happens to be this girl that Arthur met at a party that he quite liked, but then she disappeared. And like that's probably six chapters in or something, and just throughout, like just constantly, you know, the most unlikely thing to happen is that these people, to the point that it is likely, like, as in, but it doesn't matter that it's likely. Like.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of his parody or satire of the real world. Really. I mean, how many times do you meet somebody and they'll say, you know, meet somebody at a shop, what are the odds of seeing you here? Well, I know you and we're here. You know, it's not as big a coincidence almost as you kind of think. It is just life. And I think he's kind of almost parodying this human trait that we have to attribute everything to coincidence or to luck, when actually it's just a series of things happening and then your brain almost filling in, oh, that was a bit lucky.
I went to South Africa once, and I was in a very rural region, so like a really underdeveloped area. And I was chatting to he was a Sesotho man, so like he's from one of the local tribes who was from one of the townships, and so like not someone who's very well traveled, you know, like often someone who's been quite limited by their life and experiences. I was chatting to him and he went, I've actually been to England. And I was like, wow, that's really cool that you've been to England, because I wouldn't have expected you to have left the country. And he went, yeah, I went to Ottery St. Mary, which is a small town in Devon. And I've never been to Ottery St. Mary. All I knew one fact about Ottery St. Mary, which was that the housemate that I was going to be moving in with when I went back to Sheffield, so I was in Africa and I was going back after the summer back to university. The housemate I was moving in from happened to be from Ottery St. Mary, the only time I'd ever heard it mentioned. And this man had stayed at her house. probably having traveled there via the improbability drive.
Yeah. And that's it. Yeah. So I think there is a lot of himself in the writing. Like you say, it would benefit definitely from an edit. But I think that there is an element of that surreal that just makes you kind of, it's like a warm blanket. It's like a towel wrapped around you, to use a Douglas Adams kind of reference, you know, that kind of idea that it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. Doesn't matter what we do. Doesn't matter what anybody does really in the world. It's all chaos and entropy. And that kind of projects that nicely.
Do you have any problems or challenges with the book?
I mean, socially, uniquely, I don't think there are many huge problems. I even Googled, is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy problematic, to see what comes up, and nothing comes up, which is unusual in this day and age. You know, there is only one main female character, which could be argued is a little bit underrepresented, but there's only really four or five main characters across the whole book.
And like what and most of them aren't human.
No, exactly. So in that kind of social aspect, I don't think there are. I think the biggest problem I have with it now, and I was a teacher for a long time, and I tried to get some of the older children into it. And I think the biggest problem is that it is very contemporary, very referential of a time that now just doesn't exist. So trying to get them to understand the jokes about digital watches and humans thinking they're so cool because they've got digital watches. Kids just, you know, don't really grasp that concept anymore.
It's interesting because actually it being dated gives us a bit of an alien's perspective on it, you know, as in, because the aliens were like, why are you so obsessed with this? And in the 80s, being like, oh, this is a really cool thing that I have. Now we'd be like, why have you got a watch?
That's it. And I mean, in many ways, he was way ahead of his time. Obviously, the Hitchhiker's Guide in and of itself is a digital book that contains information about everything in the world. It is the internet in 1979. You know, he kind of preempted mobile phones. So there is some technology that actually probably holds up better now than it did at the time. You can, you know, children would narrate and say, oh, well, that's just the internet. That's Wikipedia.
And we're only, they have a, there's a Babel fish, which is a fish that sits inside the ear and translates languages and has been responsible for more wars than anything else in the whole galaxy, because it allowed people to actually talk to each other and thus, rather than not understanding each other, understanding how horrible each other are. But, but you know, we're nearly at that now, aren't we? Like that you could, your phone could live translate, or I'm not sure it's quite there yet. Like,
no, but one of the leading translation softwares is called Babel and is named after, I would imagine, the Babel fish. You know, I would certainly imagine the link is there. I've not researched.
Well, of course,
that.
But the Babel fish is named after the Tower of Babel.
Of course, yes.
Like so it's so it's a weird thing where it's affected culture, but then also it is so often full of references of other things, isn't it? So
yeah. So that is my biggest, I think, problem with it today, is trying to get newer readers to understand perhaps some of the more archaic references within it, which is a shame because some of them are very funny. But I do think most of it stands the test of time. I think most of it, because it is science fiction and it is futuristic science fiction, even though a lot of it is contemporaneous of that time, it does hold up today as just funny science fiction.
I think for me, there's probably a flaw that's also kind of a strength of it. It's I do find it a bit fatiguing to read, as in because it isn't just plot. There's a lot of extraneous exposition to it. You know, if I read that and then but one, but two, but three. When you read it, do you read just all five books just straight through?
No, and I think thinking about it, and it's the same with a lot of books I've read a lot of times, I suppose I mentally skip certain bits. So bits that are just a reference to something completely obscure. You know, some chapters are 10 lines long because it is just a throwaway reference to something. And I suppose mentally I skip those chapters now because I've probably read all five books over a dozen times. And I think, you know, I know it so well in that way that, I know what's there and skip that. Because you do get bogged down sometimes a little bit in, like you say, where he's perhaps could have done with a tighter edit, or maybe he's been given too much leash.
I mean, I think what I like about it as well, so I actually, I organise a retreat once a year up to this place in the Lake District, and there is a book, there is a copy of Mostly Harmless up there, which is book four, but five?
The last one, book five.
Yeah, book five. Like, and every time I go up there, I probably read two chapters of it just in this kind of the 3 days I'm there. I don't know where I'm up to in the plot. I've got no idea. And you know what? It really doesn't matter because I get in because the characters haven't changed. They're the same characters. Yeah. So they're interacting with whatever happens in the story. And all the extraneous bits are then actually just really, really satisfying and chunky to read on their own. I do have a question for you. Have you read Ian Colfer's sixth book?
No, I haven't. I've got it. I've downloaded it to my Kindle, but it's not one that I've read yet. Part of the problem is because I'm a bit like a sponge. So when I write, I cannot read the same kind of stuff as I'm writing, because otherwise I find myself starting to put things
Steal
into
it.
my own writing that I'm kind of like, hang on, is that something I've come up with? Is that something that I've just read in Pratchett or Douglas Adams or whatever? So I try and steer clear of stuff that I'm writing. And I've been writing the latest Pick Your Path is very kind of science fiction-y. And so I've been kind of reading a lot of mid-grade at the minute for another book that I'm working on. So yeah, no, I haven't read it yet, but I have. Is it worth it? Have you read it?
I have it in hardback on a shelf, and I just can't bring myself to read it. I think there's a few reasons why. I haven't heard the best things about it. I've had a very, I don't know if you've listened to the first book, the first episode in this series, where we talk about Day of the Triffids, but Night of the Triffids is a sequel to Day of the Triffids, written by someone who wasn't the original author, and it's not very good. And so I think there's a bit of it that doesn't is scared that the legacy would get spoiled. But I think it's more when I was 20, I bought series 10 of Friends on DVD that I'd never actually seen. And I didn't actually watch it for about 4 years because I knew that when I then watched it, I'd have to accept, oh no, this is over now. It's actually finished. And I think in the same way, I like the idea that there's a bit of untouched Hitchhiker's Guide out there. But yeah.
No, I will get around to reading it at some point, but I did the same thing with the last Discworld book, back on Pratchett, but with the last Discworld book.
Which I've also not read for
Yeah.
exactly the same reason.
You know, it took me a year and a half. I mean, every other book I read almost on the way back from the bookstore, but that one took me a year and a half to finally get around to read. But also, you know, that was not fully written. It wasn't fully edited. I was worried about it not being as good, and it is brilliant. But yeah, so I think I understand what you mean with that. I get that.
I think I really we should have a Pratchett podcast. Like, as
I'll
in,
come back.
I
I could
think
talk about Pratchett for
I feel
days.
like we should just get like four people on and like just all of us talk about it. Like, as in, I always my hope with Pratchett was that he was gonna allow a group of writers, you know, Neil Gaiman and a few other people, like license to actually tie up all the loose ends. Like, as in, of get of one adventure where Rincewind ends up inter doesn't have to tie all the loose ends up, but goes and interacts with the witches, has a significant amount of time with death. We're nearly done. Final thing. So, in one kind of punch, why should people who are still not quite sure, why should they hunt out Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy for a read?
I think if you like science fiction and if you like humor, satire, that kind of thing, it is unique. I have never read a book that just abandons all of the rules and says, you know what, I'm going to see what happens when I do this, as much as Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy does. And there is, I think there's so much kind of abandoned glee in that. Unabashed, let's go with unabashed. Unabashed glee.
Unabashed is good.
Yeah, there's unabashed glee in this idea of you just don't know what's going to happen next as the reader, because I genuinely don't think Douglas Adams knew what was going to happen next as a writer. And he kind of references as much almost at the beginning of like the introduction notes to the book. So I think, yeah, if you like science fiction, if you like funny, this will just, I think, hit all of those spots.
Yeah, I think be ready for it to be a bit stupid. I
Yes.
actually
You
listened
ask
to it.
what a few times as you're reading it, and then just push through and go, oh, that does make sense.
I listened to a Radio 4 podcast, not podcast, like show the other day, Open Book, which is a historic, like as in it's probably been going for like 40 years. And it is probably the talk radio in the UK show where they talk about books. And it was the first time anyone had brought Hitchhiker's Guide. And
Wow.
half the readers didn't like it. Like, as in, because they were like, oh, this isn't like serious and emotional enough. And I was like, I cannot believe you can be not liking. And like, it was the presenter of the show who'd brought it, and she was like, this is a heart book for me, you know, like as in. And they were like, you know, I don't want to be too, but I didn't think the jokes were funny. Like, yeah, you've got to laugh with the author rather than, yeah, like accepting.
Yeah, and you've got to understand where it was coming. You know, there's a joke later on where there's a character called Wonko the Sane, and he calls himself Wonko the Sane because he feels like he has to remind people that he is the sane one, and he lives in what he calls outside the asylum, and the rest of the world is inside the asylum. And he realized that the rest of the world was mad because he found a box, I think it was toothpicks, and on the box of toothpicks it told you how to use a toothpick. And he says, if we are at a point of civilization where we have to tell people how to use a toothpick, the world has gone mad. And you kind of reference that now with how we are with kind of health and safety warnings and things like that. There is this idea that actually he's still poking fun today. And I think, you know, if you accept it with that kind of mentality of, yeah, this might not make, but there, you know, there are setups in book one that don't get concluded until book five.
Yeah.
You know, and but they do all tie together. They are everything you kind of think, well, that's a bit odd, does come full circle, other than the answer to the life, the universe and everything, which never gets explained.
Any other recommendations that you have? I think obviously Pratchett's there. Anything else?
This is a bit of a sideways one, but there is a mid-grade book called Nevermore by Jessica Townsend, and it's the Morrigan Crow trilogy, I think, or maybe there's four now. And that is the closest I have found that I kind of read it, thinking there is a touch of Douglas Adams about this, with that kind of surreal aspect. Again, it is mid-grade. It's not a kind of a grown-up book, for want of a better word. It's for kind of, you know, 10 to 14-year-olds and adults like me that never grew up. But it has the touch of the Douglas Adams surrealist to it. And I that's one of my favourite kind of books in that genre.
I'm going to hunt that out, but we'll have a link to that in the podcast notes. And on that note, what else can we list in the podcast notes from you, Matt? What are you working on at the moment?
So I'm currently plotting the next Pick Your Path game book. It is going to be zombie-based. You will be a businessman, go on a holiday to, on a business trip to an island that then, when you wake up, is infested with zombies. That is taking a bit of time at the minute, because I don't just want it to be zombie, 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 zombie that you fight. I want a bit of a mix. So that is my current work. For that, I'm working on a mid-grade horror book at the moment as well, and kind of in talks with agents and publishers about that one. But other than that, yeah, it is just trying to keep going. I'm working on a tabletop miniature agnostic RPG, and I know you're a big fan of Merkborg. So me and my cousin are putting together one in that world. So we've just kind of started to build that together. We loved Forbidden Psalm, which is a brilliant TTRPG, and so something similar to that I'm working on at the minute, but with a lot more kind of a crafting element to it and things like that, so you can build things and things like that. So that'll be interesting, how see how that pans out.
That sounds awesome. We have your first five books in the Pick Your Path adventure on the store. Again, we'll have links to them in the show notes.
Perfect.
So this has been a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm. If you enjoyed it, please check out our other episodes. And we have another podcast called What is Roleplay? Matt talked about a few kind of common ideas in TTRPG, tabletop roleplay games. If you'd like to know more, check out that. Special guests, a beginner-friendly approach. Please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. It does magical things with an algorithm, and then we'll make £1 million or, you know, £5. That'd be good. Our aim for this year is to sustainably pay Dave. Hello, Dave, who edits our podcasts. You can support us by buying stuff from our store or backing us on Patreon/Beyond Cataclysm. And that was it. You've just listened to This Book I Read, hosted by me, CM Lowry, and starring
Matt Beaton.
Find out more about us, our podcasts, and opportunities for submissions to our projects and more at beyondcataclysm.co.uk. Thanks for listening.